This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
The White Lotus and other vacation shows are over, but we are just getting started celebrating them here on Post Show Recaps. It is the 2022 In Review podcast series where all month long, PSR is looking back one last time on some of the very best shows of the year. You can check out the full series by subscribing at postshowrecaps.com/2022inreview. My name is Ariel, and today we are talking about The White Lotus, etc. Like I said before, the impact that both White Lotus and etc. have had on television in 2022, and so much more. But thank God I am not alone, because they're not letting me into this hotel right now. It's not working out. So I need my heavy to help me. It is Dr. Amanda. How are you doing?
Aloha, hola, ciao, etc. Ariel, I'm so happy to be here. I'm a little jet lagged, a little bit hungover, but we went on a whirlwind tour in 2022, you and I. I cannot think of a better travel partner to go from Hawaii to the Riviera Maya to Sicilia. What a time we've had.
It's incredible. I have never gotten so many stamps in my passport ever. Like, now I have to get a new one, I think, because I can't fit anymore. It's super, super wonderful to be here. I similarly had a great time vacationing with you. You were so low maintenance. It's been incredible. I am so blessed to have had you as my co-host and co-travel buddy. It's been fun. But before we start talking about all of that, we want to remind you that Post Show Recaps has an audience survey running this month. We'd love you to take it. We want to learn more about you, what you're watching, what you're listening to, and more importantly, what you want to see more of on the podcast feed in 2023. You should head over to postshowrecaps.com/survey2022 to weigh in and help us make our podcast the very best they can be heading into the new year. Again, that's postshowrecaps.com/survey2022. Dr. Amanda, what a year.
What a year.
Did we do like a survey for best hotel stay?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, we are in the customer service industry. We aim to please. Yes. We love a comment card here.
Whether digital or real.
We have really had a time in 2022. Ariel, you and I have been dubbed by the great Suzanne as the emotional vacation podcasters.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. I'm very emotional, so it totally makes sense.
We are your go-to team if you would like to go to a very beautiful place and have an existential crisis, then you should come to talk to Ariel and me.
Yeah, if you need us to scope out the hotel that you're going to stay at, whether it's pretend on TV or real, make sure there are no dead bodies around. Mm-hmm. We are happy to go and investigate and make sure that there's no history of murder there at the hotel. Which is very important, I think, when you're on vacation. You want to feel safe, you know?
Yeah, we haven't found a hotel yet where there's no murder.
It's rough out here. Some of these places have been around for a long time. And, you know, it used to be a lot easier to murder people. So, but wow, I mean, you know, we really covered, obviously it was a great year for the White Lotus. Mm-hmm. That was like our big heavy hitter resort show that you and I covered seasons one and two of, you know, this
right
this year, even though season one was last year, but we got to do our little lead up retrospective. How are you feeling? I feel like we podcasted so much about White Lotus. Like it was such a blur at the end, like yes. That last week.
There's yes, you know, for a limited anthology series, there was nothing limited about the hours of time that we spent podcasting about the 6 episodes of season 1 and the 7 episodes of season 2. So, as you said, Ariel, season 1 aired in July and August of 2021, but 2022 was a huge year for the White Lotus, because in September we had a little award show called the Emmys. Ariel.
Oh my God! Ever heard of them? Emmys. Yeah, this isn't the daytime Emmys. This isn't the Creative Arts and Sciences Emmys, or as Kathy Griffin once said, the Schmemmys. These are the real primetime Emmys. Okay.
The big show, the main event, and the White Lotus season 1. Totally cleaned up, Ariel.
Wow. Classic HBO. Wow. Like, this is incredible. This is vintage. This is vintage HBO stuff.
In addition to winning Best Writing and Best Directing for a limited or anthology series, White Lotus completely dominated Outstanding Supporting Actress category, with I think like every female member of the cast being nominated. And of course, that category being deservedly won by Jennifer Coolidge, who gave a very memorable acceptance speech. We also had Murray Bartlett winning his Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a limited anthology series. Jake Lacy and Steve Zahn were also nominated for that. So
also ran.
So a really huge night for season 1 of The White Lotus.
Season 1 got its recognition this year. That's incredible. And it's like, what, how lucky are we that we happened to be, you know, staying at that hotel when it won the Emmys, basically.
Sometimes you're in the wrong place at the wrong time when you're at the White Lotus, yeah, but we were at the right place at the right time. Yeah, sometimes you're, you know, in the pineapple suite when you don't want to be in the pineapple suite.
Right. Or you're not and you want to be and right. Then you get what you want. You wish you hadn't kind of gotten that. Yeah.
So it was a huge year for Mike White. After coming off of the high of that really huge Emmys, we had season 2 coming up right in October, just a month afterwards. So I think that there was a lot of hype and a lot of anticipation of season 2 of The White Lotus. I think that, you know, so I really think of 2022 as a year that, like, even though we only had one of these seasons, it really felt like the spotlight belonged to the whole franchise, and that Mike White is really sort of ascendant right now. And it felt like this was a year that sort of cemented the fact that, you know, he is, a sort of elite level of talent right now, that he is a showrunner to watch. HBO seems to have a supreme amount of faith in him. Season one was proof of concept. Season 2, I think, just solidified it. And now, season 3 was greenlit like very early on in season 2's run. So, it's been a really exciting ride, and it was so much fun to get to talk about all of that.
Yeah, we almost called this podcast Mike White Ascendant, but then we were like, probably a little on the nose.
We almost called the year 2022 in review series Mike White Was Not Robbed. That's almost what we named
Mike
the whole
White
thing.
Mike White was redeemed at the Emmys. Ever heard of them? But yeah, then the season came and it landed with a huge splash in many, many ways. And it's interesting that it's so much more appropriate and emotionally correct feeling for Jennifer Coolidge to have won her Emmy for season 1 and then immediately proceed to meet her end on, mm-hmm. on season two.
Okay, yeah, no, White Lotus spoilers coming up in case anybody mm-hmm. hasn't watched.
That's true. Yes, thank you. That is a good point.
Yeah, this was a huge year for Jennifer Coolidge. Like, I think that that the Emmy felt like a long time coming. I feel like she's really had a long-standing and solid career as like this great comedic talent, and Mike White really, in the character of Tanya McQuad, gave her this platform and this showcase to really just let the audience revel in all of her talents and in her mm-hmm. charisma. So, you know, we loved her in season one. She won the Emmy for that performance. And then we get this epic season two, which it turns out, you know, once all is said and done, mm-hmm. we discover is really this operatic ending to our heroine, Tanya. Like, the whole episode ends up being this kind of like love letter, giving Tanya this really, triumphant and hilarious end. So mm-hmm. it was great to see, while we're really, really sad to see the end of this character, and to know that even though people have speculated she probably won't be in season three.
I don't know. We introduced ghosts this past season, so she mm-hmm. could be a ghost, whether it's a force ghost mm-hmm. Or some other ghost. No, that's space, which is Star Wars, so you don't like that.
Oh,
but,
okay, yeah.
No, it was. It definitely was a wonderful swan song for her, even if it wasn't quite a swan dive.
More like a swan belly flap.
More like a swan, like hit its neck on the mm-hmm. way.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but
you
it
got
was
this.
Honestly, as fun, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I had somewhat forgotten in all the discourse and all the memories that mm-hmm. I had even of watching it and talking about it, how supportive she is of herself in that final moment in this adorable way.
Love, like, that for her.
Certainly,
yeah.
Right before. She does meet her end, just the, like, she finally is able to be there for herself, seemingly, in a way that I can't believe we turned into Tanya Corner so quickly. In a way that is, honestly, I hesitate to use the word, I guess,
that, are you looking for a vaginal father? Is that the word that you're looking for?
She became my vaginal father and my phallic mother. I mean, salute to her. I'm literally saluting her right now, Tanya. I hope I can be as supportive of myself for in my life and in moments good and bad, like you were at your end.
Tanya McQuad is goals.
Yes, that's the takeaway.
So this was a great year for Jennifer Coolidge, getting recognized for her season one performance and then having a really outstanding season two. I think that, you know, lots of other, you know, memorable characters that we got to talk about, we'll get a little bit into our superlatives later on. But, you know, one of the things I was trying to figure out, Ariel, in preparing for this podcast was, you know, we obviously had a lot of fun talking about the White Lotus. We obviously, it got this great critical acclaim, but it's like getting harder and harder to, I think, appreciate or quantify or realize like what the actual impact of a show is, because viewerships mm-hmm. are so difficult to quantify with this mix of like premium cable and streaming services. Like, the audience mm-hmm. is getting more fragmented. So like White Lotus felt like a huge show, but it's like sometimes hard to know, well, is this just in my corner of Twitter that it seems like a huge show? How big is this really? How does it compare to these other flagship shows of a network like HBO? And I tried to read about that, and I don't understand these numbers very well.
I tried to read about these things.
I did my best. But luckily, I think you have a little bit of a better handle on this. It looks like the White Lotus season two finale drew record high viewerships for the White Lotus franchise, mm-hmm. With 4.1 million viewers on the release day. So I think HBO is really happy about that. And I tried to look up some comparison numbers. It looks like House of the Dragon brought in 9.3 million viewers after the season one finale. I also looked up Succession, and like it looked like their delayed viewing reports were an average of 6.1 million viewers for season three. So like there's slightly different metrics there. But by all accounts, it looks like what happened with season two was, you know, they definitely built audience that they numbers, had. They built their numbers, like they had, they were up 63% in comparison to season one. So it seems like this was, like, by HBO standards, a pretty successful show, Ariel.
Absolutely. And I think the numbers, any numbers that when it's a series, they're going to look at how the series is doing against itself, certainly. And if the number is growing, that's always going to be a net positive, obviously. And I think to me personally, more important to the actual figure as far as the finale or episodes or how it's growing or not is like people, and this is even more harder to quantify to your point about the ratings and how like fragmented everything is, which I think is absolutely accurate. It's the quote unquote, what I call the, what I, and a student of television call Ooh. Buzz. Mm. And I think it's this intangible thing of like, are people talking about it and do people care? And I think for my money, it seems like the White Lotus got more people, quote unquote, activated online, whether it's like Twitter, like you said, or sharing memes wherever else people share memes. I don't know. I think old people share memes on Facebook. But like more people seem to not just be talking about it and posting about it, but like I met people and people would be talking about it in person, which I think is rarer and rarer these days, as everyone knows, to kind of to have everyone be on the same page. And like I would probably argue that White Lotus specifically had more online engagement, at least as far as I could tell, versus like even House of the Dragon. Because I think House of the Dragon most likely did, and even in these figures, and you can guess, had more like quote unquote raw numbers as far as the mm-hmm. viewership and ratings and all that. But I think that kind of show, it kind of puts people, so not everyone likes it, not everyone tunes in, right? So the White Lotus is like checking more boxes as far as the kind of people who watch, and it just seemed like it was kind of every single person was watching it and like invested in it and enjoying it. So that was like a fun, that just added another layer to the many layers that we're talking about in this incredible onion that is the White Lotus.
Yeah, it felt very buzzy, and I think that you're right that it had a lot of elements that seem to appeal to different people and like different things that we look to get from TV. Like it had this, you know, we now know that part of the signature White Lotus format is we start a season with a sort of a death, and then there's a whodunit element. So we definitely saw with this season the sort of Reddit mystery box, you know, theory chasers were activated looking for clues. I talked about this show with my mom, who would talk about how beautiful Sicily looked and how great the clothes were, and like,
you're like,
how
what about handsome, the dead bodies?
How she's handsome like, the actors beautiful. Are. So people were talking about, I mean, it had all of the soap operatic elements of like relationships and who's cheating with who, and, you know, attractive people in beautiful places.
Tell me more.
This is the brochure. If you stay at the White Lotus, you will. But then it also like has this darkness about it and this willingness to engage with, you know, these deeper themes to actually poke fun and satirize and criticize, you know, some aspects of our culture, some aspects of society, sort of hold up a mirror at the less attractive parts of ourselves and ask questions about, you know, humans' ability to change and be better. So I did feel like it was a show that you could sort of watch in different ways, depending on what you were looking for. And a lot of people got a lot out of it. Like people were talking about questions about relationships and cheating and infidelity and like what makes a healthy relationship, what makes an unhealthy relationship. So it was a very buzzy show. I talked about it with my friends who are TV nerds, with my friends who are more casual TV watchers. It was like a Sunday night appointment viewing kind of show.
We love it. We love sitting in front of a TV. Nobody does this anymore, probably, but we love sitting in front of the TV at the hotel where we stay. And we you and I stay at the White Lotus and then turn on the White Lotus show and on TV to watch it. We're like, we're so meta about it. But yeah, I think
everyone I know who's gone on a vacation in the last year has said like, oh my gosh, I felt like I was at the White Lotus, or I overheard these people talking at this other table and it was just like the White Lotus.
And you're like, do you think those are the murderers here? Isn't that something that happens at every hotel? But I think for sure it's like you said, it kind of just permeated culture in a way that is rarer these days, in a way that I'm sure HBO was thrilled about. But you know, to your point about the couples of it all and how it got people talking, do you think there are any couples that like decided to break up because of the show? Now I'm thinking about this.
Please write in if the White Lotus ended your relationship.
I mean, that would be incredible.
I'm sure it caused fights, right? Like I've talked to people who are like, oh, I watched this with my partner. And they thought that Harper was right. But I thought that Ethan was right. Or like, I definitely think this is the kind of show that could potentially get you fighting with your partner.
Yeah. And to your point, there's a couple or multiple couples out there that were saved by the show. Oh. Like, we actually need to talk about the thing that's affecting us. And it's not Harper. It's us. It's us right here. It's between you and I. It has nothing to do with her and whether or not she cheated, because she didn't. that's what somebody would say. It's not me.
And then there's a third category of people who left their partners to pursue Theo James.
Wow, so that's like all. Professionally stalk him.
Yes.
Wow. Please don't do that. But yeah, I totally believe that there are people out there who do that. I mean, after seeing what I saw, I'm just saying. But yes, what do we know? That's season two. We talked about it. We talked about it so much for so long and so many different.
We really did.
I started talking in my sleep about it one night, and there was no one there to answer me. You weren't there.
Oh my gosh!
I think you were out partying that night. But what do we know about about season three? Like, we're probably going to get it in 2023, although it hasn't been officially announced, just because these, you know, they're not very long, 6 or 7 episodes. And for the most part, you know, there's not a lot of visual effects to be added to the show afterwards.
Yeah. Mike White has been able to produce and release these seasons like in a pretty efficient way. If you look at the production and release times from season one and season two. So I definitely think it's quite possible that we get another season in 2023, which would be a pure delight. And we do know that the location scouting for season three is officially underway. It was even announced, I think, in the post finale HBO little interview tag that they had at the end of their episodes, where Mike White was interviewed and said that he was thinking about Asia. He was looking to explore themes of, you know, Western versus Eastern spirituality, and Westerners going to the East and sort of co-opting that spirituality, which does
we love co-opting here at the White House.
Neo-colonialism at its best.
Neo-colonialism is bay here at the White House.
I thought you were going to say neo-canolianism.
That's what I started to say. And then I was like, wait, somebody write that down. That's a different idea.
That's what Bert gets at the breakfast buffet. So the speculation right now is that maybe Japan... we're very much like still in the phase of rumors. I've heard rumors that Connie Britton might come back. I've heard rumors that Laura Dern might be potentially on the table
to follow up her voice appearance on the phone earlier,
which was very smart, because the fact that she did the voice, but it wasn't like Laura Dern in the family pictures, means that like that's sort of wide open for her to come in to a future season and play any character.
Yes. And then she'll get on and be like, oh, I hate using the phone. I never use the phone. Like, you'll never hear her. Mm-hmm. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely, like you said, a lot of rumors and speculations. But there have been some hints thrown out. And it does seem like Asia is at least the closest thing to confirmed, I think, that we mm-hmm. can have here without actual confirmation.
Right, right. And we know that that Mike White was sort of thinking of taking season two in a different direction, and it wasn't until he was actually on location at the hotel that he felt like the atmosphere and the ambiance in Sicily was really demanding that he tell a different type of story. So even if these, you know, rumors that we're hearing are accurate at this point in time, anything is subject to change at any point in the creative process.
And as he becomes more power hungry, he can just demand anywhere he wants. Like, I know I said Asia before, but like
space,
we're going to space. I was gonna say, like, it's either Alaska or space. Those are the final frontier.
Like, Alaska slash
Arctic or space. Like, the cold, we have to go somewhere cold. Skiing somewhere, that's somewhere I would want to see, like on the
ski chalet.
Yeah, the après ski. I love like a murder, blood on the snow. It's very evocative.
Is this the next Knives Out movie? Or is
I mean, I stan again. Yeah. Everything I just the last three sentences I said, it applies. It applies to Glass or to excuse me, to Knives Out franchise as well. But I think there's something particularly, I don't know, beautiful and tragic about a bleak, snowy landscape, mm-hmm. and the darkness contained within us when we have to cover up so many layers. Yeah. We love layers.
Well, layers of the onion.
Layers of the onion, both Tanya and Glass
Another
Onion.
Another
wow.
layer.
Another layer. Somebody did a remix.
Oh, really? Did they?
It's just saying another layer, and then like they add this beat. It's ridiculous. I love the internet.
You have to send that to me.
I will. Look, I will.
I'm glad you bring this up, because speaking of the internet, we talked about the White Lotus's impact in terms of its critical acclaim, its viewership, the buzz. But I think that probably the most important index of how successful and popular a television show is the memes, Ariel. Mm-hmm.
Oh, not the memes, as I have been known to call. Yes, I agree. The memes.
As they say in France, the memes. So no.
What was Ethan's thing?
Memetica. What did he say? You have a serious case of memetic personality or something
mirroring.
Like.
But this is what he was talking about. The memes.
He's talking about the memes. Yeah. So many great memes. So many great memes came out of White Lotus. I have to like start with season one, because the season one memes like definitely have staying power. I think the probably the most popular White Lotus meme of all is the Tanya in her funeral garb toasting on the boat with her champagne, saying "Wee-hee!"
What? Oh my gosh, she's already dressed in black. Oh, but that was for her mom. Yeah,
that was
but still.
Her mother.
Her mother. I think it's very versatile. It's a versatile meme. We stand versatility here, and I like it. It's beautiful. The champagne we love, and she looks great.
She looks great. It's iconic. It's memorable. It has multiple uses. It's celebratory. You can use it. Somebody posts good news, you can use it. If like something
if they
good
post
happens,
bad news.
It's just great, an all-purpose go-to meme. I've used it many times myself. Ariel, this is in honor of you. I wanted to put the mom cringe.
I think I'm gonna start say I it was more of like a vocal meme, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like I just kept saying it, so I think that will become a thing in my predictions for 2023.
Ah, you think
spoken memes.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that's one that like whenever I see it when I'm scrolling through like the GIF search bar, I'm always like, I should be using this more. Like, but I guess that's a testament to its limitations, that people aren't posting things enough that I should like want to say mom cringe. I could say it to my mom, but I don't think she would get it or appreciate it.
Who are you mocking there when you say that?
There's a lot of great Armand memes. And of course, Murray Bartlett winning Best Supporting Actor in 2022. We love that. I think the I'm obsessed with you is probably one of the ones that I've used the most frequently. Mm-hmm.
I use the one of him pooping a lot. Oh, I'm sorry. I guess that's more of a gif. That's not really a meme. I they told me not to use that one again at the place I used it at.
So. Oh no. Oh no. I think a really fun meme that was going around maybe in November of this year was the send them to the White Lotus meme. Ariel, do you remember that when people would just
whether it was the Stranger Things kids or they did that actually with we've brought up Glass Onion, the Knives Out sequel, when that came out, it was those people already look like they're staying
basically already at the White Lotus. Yeah.
So yeah, that was the latest one that I saw. But to your point, there were a bunch. It was very reminiscent of True Detective season 4 when that was a huge thing of trying to guess who they were going to cast. These two should be
actors
or characters should be. The new faces of that franchise.
Yeah, that is always a fun format. I have a good time with it. And I think what I'm going to declare in my own personal rankings what I think is the greatest White Lotus meme to come out of two seasons is Tanya McQuad speaking to the Sicilian ship captain, imploring to him, "These gays, they're trying to murder me."
Yeah. These gays, they're trying to murder me. It's very good. I think the before that it would have been the Valentina Peppa Pig interaction, but this one, I agree, this one has definitely overtaken post finale. It's definitely overtaken the internet.
Yes. And this has versatility because you can always put another word over gays, right? Depending on who's trying to kill you. So anytime that you're feeling attacked on the internet.
Right. You can change the gays. You can change the murder meme. Listen, Amanda and I will curate your memes for you. We have ideas. We have the capability to make fake memes.
For a very reasonable price. We will be your meme consultants.
Wow. A meme consultant. I love it. Did you vote? Did you vote, babe?
I feel like this one I'm gonna whip out every
This one is again. Oh my god, I am my walking prophecy of what is a self-fulfilling prophecy of myself. This one is definitely more of a vocal one, something you say, did you vote, babe? It's a thing.
No, this is the
way
he
says it. He's such a shithead.
It's so good. I mean, so this is a great one to use. You can use this whenever there's an election,
you can use it local election,
municipal primaries, you can use a general election,
PTA.
And so that's great. And then also, if you see somebody complaining about something in an unhelpful way on the internet, you can just shoot them, "Did you vote, babe?"
Babe, yes. And nothing is more antagonistic than adding the word babe to something when you either don't know the person or don't like the person.
Oh my gosh, I've done that a couple of times when somebody's snarkily replied to my comment on Twitter. I think that one time it was in a thread that we were both in. Uh-huh. It was something how did you put this person in the death draft? And then it was because I did it before the season started, babe.
Yeah, babe. Yeah, you gotta look at the dates, babe. I can't. Yeah, White Lotus. I feel so lucky we got to stay at all these beautiful places.
We had so much fun. We had so much fun with the White Lotus. And I'm sure that, when it comes back, we'll reprise it all again when we start to hear more about season 3. But, Ariel, it was the White Lotus, but there was also an et cetera in there.
We love et ceteras here at the White Lotus podcast.
And the White Lotus et cetera podcast. We also So we did this, Ariel, because, you know, we wanted to see, like, when you commit to traveling with somebody, you need to know that it's a good match, right? You need to know that, like, you know, you're going to have a similar rhythm in terms of, like, you know, are you going to get up and eat breakfast? Are you going to go out for the day? Are you cool if I go out and you stay at the hotel? Or, like, is that, like, we had to work all of that out.
Before even our coverage of season one of White Lotus, because the stakes were high.
The stakes were really high. So in order to gear up for that, we decided to start our little travel journey together over on a little streaming network called Peacock.
Woof. I still haven't been able to find it, even though we watched the show and podcasted about it. But yes, we stayed at a resort called The Resort.
The Resort. The Resort at the Riviera Maya. And this was an 8-episode limited anthology series, dare I say, Ariel. And, you know, we thought, like, it definitely looked interesting, and I'm glad that we covered it. I'm glad that I watched it. It has a really interesting creative team, like executive producer credits for Andy Ciara, Sam Esmail, Ben Sinclair. So folks that you might recognize from their involvement in Palm Springs or Mr. Robot or High Maintenance. A really talented cast, including William Jackson Harper, who we know and love as Chidi from The Good Place, and Kristen Milioti, who was really the standout performance for me in The Resort, and also supported by a great role for Nick Offerman.
That's right.
Yeah. So it was a really fun show. Definitely more mystery and supernatural than The White Lotus is, but also, like, playing on similar themes of, you know, what people look for when they go on vacation, like having that kind of existential crisis, having a marital crisis, and, like, hoping that you're going to go to a really beautiful place and that's going to fix everything. It had a similar sort of dark comedic tone that I think it played on a little bit differently than The White Lotus did. Fewer of the people listening to this podcast watch The Resort than watch The White Lotus. I think it's, like, a fun show to binge. It had a really cool vibe to it. Like I said, great acting performances, some, like, laugh out loud moments.
Yes. Yes. Many. You upset The Resort Hive by saying more people were watching The White Lotus than The Resort.
Oh no. Do you think The Resort Hive is going to come for me?
They're going to come for us
with all of their resort memes.
We're all their resort wear and memes. The Resort. This is a show. I have this this category of shows, of whether it's stuff that I have podcasted about, or, you know, a friend got me into. Like, I would have never discovered this show on my own, and I had heard of it, but I would have probably never sat down to watch it, honestly. Mm-hmm. You know, with the peacock of it all, and of, like, yeah, I'll get it. As everyone knows, there's a lot of content out there these days. Mm-hmm. So it's hard sometimes to zero in on a thing if it's not, like, on your radar for a very specific reason. You kind of put it on that I'll get to it list. Mm-hmm. And as we know about the I'll get to it list, you don't always get to it. So this probably would have stayed there for a while. And I remember it and look back on it so fondly, genuinely sweet. Like you said, a great mix of genres in a way, and, like, emotional, different parts of the emotional spectrum, very funny, very sad, very, like, touchingly sweet, and some wonderful sci-fi stuff. Like, the nerd in me was like, wow, this is so great. For me, the standout was Luis Gerardo Mendez, who played Balthazar,
because
I hadn't seen him anywhere, and this was the first time I saw him. And I hope I see more of him. He was such a delight. And it was, like, one of those gems of a show that you can say it feels special when you're watching it. And I think part of sometimes what makes these things feel special is that no one else is watching it. And while you wish more people were, it's kind of like, this is what we got. It's beautiful. And I'm glad we had this time. So yeah, that's where really we cut our resort teeth, so to speak, with each other. And it was a great little show.
Yeah. I would say, like, I think it's, like, more sincere than The White Lotus. So, oh, like, yes, there's something, like, that's sort of nice about that. Like there were moments that I thought were very moving and affecting for me personally. So if it was just something that you have like at all of a passing interest in, I definitely recommend checking this out. And you know, and you have a great companion podcast.
That's true. Wow. Those podcasts are still there. That's crazy that you said that.
They are, Ariel.
They never left that hotel. They just stayed there, and those fun little podcasts will run or will skateboard next to the pool to their heart's content.
They're stuck in 2007 and 2022.
Oh, no.
On a loop forever.
So I think that we can move on to, we started the show, or we talked early on in the show about awards.
The prestigious
Emmy Awards. And you and I showed up at the red carpet at the Emmy Awards and they didn't let us in. It was very rude, but we won't mention that again. But we will create our own award show here and hand out some superlatives and awards to some of these fun characters that we've come to know and love this past year.
Ariel, what do you think they call the awards that they give out at the White Lotus? They're not the Emmys. They're not the Schmemmys, the Tanyas.
Because, you know, RIP.
I know. Is that like, but do you want to give Tanya? Like what?
No, maybe. We can't give her, we can't give Cecil B. DeMille the Cecil B. DeMille Award. Ugh, you idiot. Maybe it's the, I can't remember Tanya's mother's name. Maybe.
Could be like the Spritzies. The
phallic mother.
Oh, no. Oh no.
A full blue moment. I don't know. Something high class. Maybe a color to match White Lotus, the Rose Awards or something.
The Rose
Awards.
What about the Spritzies? Because they're always
I love the Spritzies. It sounds so dumb. I love it. It's perfect.
Perfect. Okay, now that we've come up with a sufficiently dumb name, Ariel, who would you give the Spritzy for MVP of? And I guess we're talking about White Lotus vacation shows, et cetera. The MVP
and et cetera.
And et cetera. The MVP of all of the different resort shows that we covered this year.
Yeah, you see, now that I talked about Baltazar, I want to give it to Baltazar.
Oh, wild upset.
I know. Like the person no one's heard of. But if I'm being honest with myself, he would easily be my honorable mention here. But I think I have to give it to Daphne. I think taking her entire journey into consideration, and I probably would have said after like episode one or two, like no effing way am I giving this award to her. Mm-hmm. But the way she's able to be a Zen master / a psychopath and kind of will her emotions in a way and kind of wield them positively? For herself and take power, like regardless of how you feel about where she falls on things and if you feel like her approach is quote unquote correct or right or not or anything like that, I just think she was a fascinating character that really surprised me. I'm big on surprises. I talk about that all the time when Grace and I talk about movies on Push Recaps Theater, like what was the most surprising, and she really was. And I think she will live on perhaps in a future season, but she will live on in my heart for a long time. And I love someone who can just like I said, surprise me, but really run away with like the emotion of a scene. And she did that many, many times throughout the season.
Yeah. Daphne was a huge character. Megan Fahey's performance was outstanding. I've seen a lot of praise for her from both critics and just fans on the internet for her ability to play a scene revealing multiple dimensions of subtle emotions. And, you know, most notably in that scene where Ethan tells her that he thinks that their spouses are cheating together. That was a really incredible scene. Definitely, Daphne is a great choice. I have to give the MVP to Tanya McQuad.
Oh.
I do, because she had two great seasons. I agree with the Emmy Award with the MEO Award Academy. Is it an academy, Ariel?
We are an academy here.
Okay, we are an academy, and I
unto ourselves.
The fact that she has that moment that she shoots the high end gaze and then plummets to her death at her own doing, no one to blame but her own stupidity. It was so glorious, like two really glorious seasons. So I have to give the MVP to Tanya McQuad.
I love it. It feels appropriate. We as awards givers know from other awards shows that they love to give like a posthumous award, whether it's a character or a real life actor. So this makes sense. If anything, it makes us more prestigious, honestly.
It's a lifetime achievement award.
Yes, we love lifetime achievements.
Yes. Ariel, is there an LVP spritzy that we're going to give out?
I'm trying to think of season one and season two. I kind of, this is going to sound so rough. I'm trying to think if there's anyone on season two that I'd give it more. I kind of like the person that stuck out of my brain is kind of boring, but Mark from season one.
Oh.
Look on your face.
Mark Mosbacher?
Mark Mosbacher, just because.
With a swollen testicle?
Yes, because the way he, and really this stuck out to me more so, especially on the rewatch, the way he is so, I don't know, almost toxic with how he deals with news throughout the first, like the first three or even four episodes, he's dealing with some like piece of information that has thrown him for a spin. And I think even like at least Cameron, like in, you know, in season two, there's something fun about him.
Oh, I think I love Steve Zahn as Mark Mosbacher.
I love the performance. Like, I think I'm making the distinction between, like, similar, I guess, to how he did with the MVP, like the, you know, the performer versus the character. But I just think some of the, I don't know, he's just, he's not like a bad person per se.
But the
level of privilege that he is unaware of, and just how like fundamentally flawed, honestly, like the glasses that he looks at on upon the world are, it seems worse long term perhaps, and just like all in society wise than some of these other things that like Dark Triad is getting into.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, hey, look, you just, that's your truth, Ariel. You don't have to defend it to me. Yeah, I'm just going to interject now just to talk about how buzzy this show is with the White Lotus and like what an impact is. Like one of my friends who like, I don't think has ever listened to my podcast. I think he does know my podcast about the White Lotus. He just, apropos of nothing, texted me, was the word pasta uttered once in all of White Lotus season two? I don't think it was.
Honestly, I can remember her harmonica VT day, something. I don't know if she mentioned.
Did she say pasta or did she say pasta, spaghetti or linguine? I don't know. We're going to have to do, write in with the answer.
We're going to have to do a deep dive to 5 years.
We haven't dived deep enough yet. I think so. For me, I think the LVP is the first name that I thought of was, I don't even know. I think that his character had a name, but maybe Alex Merlino's character from season one is probably like what he wasn't like a load bearing structure in the plot of season one. Like, I think
the way I've been feeling guilty ever since I first chat on him, so to speak, his performance in that episode. And then now to come to this moment, I feel like I feel seen.
Yeah, he's definitely on the short list in terms of value added for a season. So Alex Merlino at least gets honorable mention. I do think that there are some characters in season two that you could say, like, you know, weren't our favorites or we didn't need them. Like, was Rocco like utilized that well? Did he add a lot? I don't know. Maybe Rocco's on that list. Giuseppe definitely gave me major creep vibes. But I don't know. No, let's give it to Alec. He deserves it. He has an Emmy now. He has a spritzy LVP too. That seems fair.
Good for you, Alec. Congratulations.
Okay. Ariel, who's the person from all of our vacation shows that you would most like to travel with, go on a vacation with, if I wasn't available?
This is rough. This is hard to pick one person. But I think I'm going to have to go with Mia from season two. I almost said Valentina because I thought she could like get stuff. She would, I would figure out a way to get on her good side. And then she would like yell at other people when they were like taking our seats or like doing stuff like that. I think she'd be like a good power person to have in like social situations. But I think all in, pound for pound, Mia would be the most fun, the most ridiculous, the most like willing to just go with the flow and show me around Sicily, honestly.
That would be amazing. Yeah, I'm definitely going to go with Mia also. I think she would just be a blast. I loved her. Like, she was one of the characters that... There's so many characters that I liked for different reasons. I mean, we talked about Daphne, we talked about Tanya, but I think Mia really enchanted me as like just somebody that I just delighted in. I would love to go on a vacation with Mia. She would be so fun. She'd be spontaneous. She also seems to be like, you know, she's always going along with what Lucia wants to do. So you could probably get her to do whatever you wanted to do. She's like a good kind of come with gal. Just make sure that she doesn't get into your bag and mix up your pills.
Your drugs. You better have your pills color-coded with little stamps on them because she'll mess you up.
Yes.
What about on the other side, person you'd least like to vacation with?
Almost everybody else. No, I think it has to be Shane. It has to be Shane, God, right? Like
We were totally on the same page for this one too.
Has to be Shane. He's like the most, I mean, there's like, to say that the characters in The White Lotus are flawed is an understatement. Like, even, it's generous, we just like extolled Mia's praises, but everybody in The White Lotus has a flaw or a blind spot or a dark side. But when it comes to Shane, it's really all dark side, right? Like, there's no silver lining on that cloud.
It's not great. I mean, I would love to have his mom around. I guess not. It's definitely more the Molly Shannon versus the actual character, but I would love to hear her telling stories. But yeah, I almost said Salvatore from the front desk of season two.
He's
annoying. But then I remembered Shane and I was like, oh, it's definitely Shane.
Salvatore might at least bring you some arancini.
He'll be like, I'm at the beach club. I'm here. I don't know what I'm supposed to be next. And I'd be like, you need to go get me an arancini, like Amanda said.
Ariel, who wins the spritzy for the most difficult to classify in a game of F. Murray Abraham?
Oh my God. Most difficult. It might be, I don't know. I think it might be Harper.
Ooh,
for me. I think there are so many different parts of her personality that pop at different times and different situations. And yeah, for some people it's like, oh, she's, you know, she complains and naggy, whatever. But we saw her show a lot of other things as well.
She showed other things as well. No, she's got a wild side to her. She can be fun.
Yes. I think it's just most, and it kind of depends on like which Harper I'm getting, you know, that's like, if I want to Murray or Abraham her. I don't know. What about you?
I think that this is a really clear slam dunk for our boy Cameron.
Yes. It seems like this category was written specifically.
I may have written this category specifically.
We are retroactively giving awards via
the Cameron, the Cameron Sullivan Award for person that you can't decide whether you want to F Murray or Abraham.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think we all feel a certain kind of way about about him and about ourselves in kind. Depending on how we feel about him, we look at ourselves in the mirror a little differently.
Very dark triad. Oh, not the mirror, Ariel.
We don't like mirrors and we don't like space.
Best Customer Service Award.
I mean, I was going to say Isabella, but it's got to
She's very professional.
It's got to be Belinda, right? Yeah. Just as far as like all in, you know, from beginning to end experience. And the things that we saw her go above and beyond to do for Tanya and seemingly a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. I think she deserves this award for sure.
Give Belinda her flowers. She definitely deserves this. I did like dabble for a moment and entertain the idea of giving this to Lucia, who does eventually actually defraud somebody, which I get.
Best Bernie Madoff award. Yeah,
I think that before that, you know, her customers were very satisfied, but I definitely think that Belinda is head and shoulders over the rest of the White Lotus service staff in terms of what she provides. The worst customer service award, Ariel.
Oh God. Can't really say, Armand. I think it's gotta be Giuseppe, right? Because he's just not good at the service that he's providing, whether it's the piano or whatever he was trying to do to Mia and that deconsecrated church.
She was not satisfied.
She was not satisfied. His heart was ultimately not satisfied or maybe overly satisfied. So I think I got to give it to him because music is very special, as we saw Mia prove.
That's great. Let's sort of cut to the chase, Ariel. Who gets the spritzy for best butt in the White Lotus?
The award that everybody has been waiting for the entire night.
I know Jess Sterling has been waiting to find out. This is the most highly anticipated award of the night. The spritzy for best butt.
It's really only it's what it's the nominees are.
the nominees for best butt in the White Lotus or Vacation Shows, etc.
It's I think we see Shane's in season one.
Mm-hmm. That would be Jake Lacy.
Yeah, we see Cameron's in season two.
Yeah, Theo James in season two.
And we see, just worth mentioning, we see whoever Armand gets caught with. It's the skinny Alec Merlino. Yes, it's Dylan.
It's Dylan, yeah.
And then in season two, there was another one, right?
In season two, we see Leo Woodall, who plays Jack. Mm-hmm. We see his tattooed butt. And Ariel, we also see Sabrina Impacciatore's butt.
That's true. Oh, my God.
There's a lot of good butts. Are we missing any butts? Oh, we see Adam DeMarco, who plays Albie.
Yeah, the White Sox. No, that's a no for me. I'm not gonna look. I think it has to be. I think it has to be. It has to be Theo James, right? Another award.
That's spritzy for best butt in the White Lotus season one, the White Lotus season two, and the resort is congratulations, Theo James.
Yeah.
Outstanding work.
Very upstanding. Incredible. Another award that we made up just so we could bring up Cameron/Theo James. What an incredible night. I'm so sorry to everyone who came here and got dressed up for the spritzies because now this church that we sat at has now been deconsecrated.
We have just deconsecrated this podcasting studio/church. Wow, so the spritzies, what a high honor. You know, this was 2022 was a year where I drank more Aperol spritzes than I wanted to. And I think I'm gonna take 2023 off of the Aperol spritzes. But it's like you're on vacation when in Sicily, you know, it's like that's what vacations are for. You overindulge in what is there, what that place has to offer. And we really did overindulge in these shows, Ariel, doing sometimes 2 to 3 podcasts a week. We've done 4 podcasts a week on some special occasions. But, you know, I think that we had a great trip, and I'm going to keep these memories with me forever.
Yeah, we worked almost as hard as Theo James. but yeah, no, it's been such an incredible time. I am exhausted, and I'm happy that we got to come home for the holidays and spend time with our families. Mm-hmm. We're so generous of our bosses to allow us to come back to the mainland, to the States. And like you said, these memories will stay with us, and hopefully stay with all of you. This 2022 in review series has been going on all month long, and there's only one left after this. This is the penultimate. This is the penultimate episode.
We love a penultimate episode.
A high honor for us. And it's been such a thrill to do it with you, Amanda.
Oh, thank you, Ariel. Well, what else do you have going on? Like, where can people keep up with you now that your bags are unpacked and you're done vacationing and ready to get back to work talking about more serious things?
I am trying to find my passport because I have since lost it in the last 10 minutes. No, I am covering movies as always with Grace over on Push Recaps Theater, and covering, there's something else going on. Oh, that's right. We covered 1899 to go into similar, like the resort is to White Lotus as 1899 is to Dark. So we did like an 1899 watch, getting us ready for our full Dark rewatch with spoilers. We're very excited about that first episode of season one of the Dark rewatch is imminent, so look out for that in the next couple of days. I'm super excited to get into that and super intimidated because that show is super complicated in a way that I love, and hurts my brain, and even the hurts my brain thing in a way that I love. And you know, just looking forward to the new year and what amazing things the new year can bring us.
Awesome.
What about you, Amanda? I know we're still on Twitter. We're holding on tight.
Yes. Yeah. So you can keep up with me on Twitter, where I'm at Dr. Amanda R. That's the R Amanda R. And I am not doing any other podcasts right at this very moment, but pretty early on in 2023, I'm really excited to start a project where I'm going to be gearing up for Party Down Season 3 by doing a rewatch of Party Down Season 1 and 2, maybe Party Down the Hatch, if you will. I don't know. Ooh. We're just spitballing here, still workshopping it. But I'm really excited because my co-host for that podcast is going to be the great Emily Fox. We'll be talking about Party Down Season 1 and 2. I'm still sort of working out the details, but in the lead up to the anticipated Season 3, which will be dropping late in February of 2023.
Yeah, that's one of those we were gone, but we came back. So people love a reboot is the wrong word, but a follow-up
yes.
Series, if you will.
Yes.
That's very, very.
Yeah, something like 10 years has passed, but these actors don't seem to have aged that much. They look great. Everyone looks great.
No, especially that, what's his name? Adam. I'm like, Adam Driver. No, Adam.
Adam Scott.
Lambert. Yeah, Adam Scott. yes, that is super exciting. I have to, it's been so long since I rewatched. I would love to. I definitely.
Oh, well, you have just the occasion to do it now, Ariel.
I love a companion piece, mm-hmm. if you will. Mm-hmm. But before we close out, just want to remind everyone one last time about the audience survey. That's postshowrecaps.com/survey2022. Every response is greatly appreciated, and it will help make post-show recaps the best it can be. Again, that's postshowrecaps.com/survey2022. Well, Amanda, the end is near. Mm-hmm. That's going to do it for mm-hmm. us here on the White Lotus Resort Show, etc. episode of 2022 in review. And speaking of episodes, make sure you're subscribed to the 2022 in review podcast series at PosherRecaps.com/2022in review as our look backs in the year in TV continue. And it's almost over. Like we said, there's only one episode left, the grand finale. But we hope we have kept you warm and busy during this long December. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bon voyage.